Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Somewhere in the Skies podcast is free to listen to every week, but if you would like to help support the show, we have a very active Patreon page where you give what you think the show is worth. In return, you'll get early access to the main show, bonus episodes, and priority to ask our guests your listener questions. Your support truly makes the show continue and grow. So, to learn more and to join, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
Guys, we are here right now with one of the gentlemen who found the metal alloys out in the Roswell Desert at the famed crash site. We have with us once again returning guest Chuck Sikowski. Chuck, welcome back to Somewhere in the Skies.
Hi, thank you for having me back. This is pretty exciting. It's been something that I've been doing for years and years and years. You know, one of the first investigations I was doing was on Roswell 35 years ago. And I was one of the lucky people that actually met and became friends with Glenn Dennis, who was the mortician, and Walter Haught. And I used to go by the museum so many times. I lived in California. So every time I took the family on vacation, it was always routed around Roswell. And I'd go say hi to the guys, and they got to the point where, they were comfortable seeing me. They knew who I was. And so they started feeding me more and more information. And it was Glenn Dennis who actually gave me the GPS coordinates to the debris site. So it was like one of the guys from 1947, rather than getting it from another investigator. I got it right from, the proverbial horse's mouth. And then, a lot of the stuff that, when I interviewed him that I learned is pretty cool stuff. And some of it was published and some of it wasn't, but it's cool because, he would talk to me as a friend, rather than an investigator. So we got down to the meat of things a few times. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I know. And of course, Roswell is that case. So many UFO researchers sort of hang their hat on it. Whereas more skeptical people will say, what's there left to discover about the oldest UFO case out there? And then lo and behold, you, Frank Kimbler, who we'll get to as well, have developments in the story. Not only developments, I would say more evidence than anyone has ever been able to actually find that has anything to do with the Roswell incident. So I guess let's kind of get to the meat of it. What brought you out to the crash site with the geologist, Frank Kimbler, who I've also had the pleasure of going out there and looking for stuff. I never found anything, so I'm extremely envious of the both of you. But can you sort of run us through the few times you have been out there with Frank and kind of walk us through what some of those discoveries might have been, if you don't mind?
Well, it was interesting because I think the very first time I was out at the debris site was around 2000. And I had a metal detector out there and I was, looking for, anything. And then 2002, I did a TV show with the Sci-Fi Channel, and we did an archaeology dig out there. And after they were done shooting the TV show, I convinced the archaeologist to let me and my sister come out one day later after the production crew had left and do our own dig. I didn't like what they were doing. You know, they were digging into the Jurassic period. I only wanted to dig back to 1947. So we did strip digs. And in 2002, my sister and I actually found a piece of debris. And then I had it analyzed here in Colorado on an SEM, scanning electron and microscope, and it was an aluminum alloy. We did a press release a year later, and lo and behold, you know, we did a press release on it, and we were asking for a lab to pick it up so we could do more analysis on it, and lo and behold, it was Bass, Bigelow Aerospace. Now, at the time, back then, I didn't realize that Bigelow was actually working for the Pentagon. We learned that back in 2017. Years later, that he was under contract with the Pentagon looking for UFO materials and investigating UFO sites. So it was kind of exciting later to find out that when he was analyzing the piece that we found in 2002, it was probably funded by the Pentagon. So they know a little more about me than I kind of want them to know about me.
What happened to those pieces, Chuck? Were they still in possession of them?
Yeah, well, what happened was the Maxwell Museum in New Mexico had archived it. And it took me about 3 months to find it. And then I had to write a proposal up to the board of directors to be able to release it so Bigelow Aerospace would be able to analyze it. And but I threw a caveat in there. I said, okay, we're not going to give them the whole piece. We're going to cut a piece off and send them a piece of it because, you know, this stuff you never know.
Right.
So Dr. Bill Dolman was able to cut a piece, and we sent that piece to Bigelow. Within 1 week, I got an email back saying that it was an unknown polymer. I swear. Okay, this is what the email said. It's posted on my website. If you go way, way back and look and search, Roswell debris. And I actually have a clip of it. But it said it's like really nothing, but it's still an unknown polymer based on the catalog polymers that we have in the lab. And right there was a red flag for me stating that, okay, it's not common. Because if it was a common polymer, then, obviously we would have been able to identify it. And then I said, so what's next? And they said isotope analysis. And I said, oh, my gosh, okay, isotope analysis. Let's see if this thing's even from this planet. And that was the last I heard of Bigelow. And I tried numerous times to get a hold of him. And it was about a year later, I finally got an email back saying, oh, it was nothing. We sent the piece back. Well, I can't guarantee what they sent back to, you know, the museum was the actual piece, but it didn't matter to me because I know that we have an actual piece still, still archived there.
Smart. Yeah.
Stuff, for anybody who wants to know, Ben Mezrich had wrote a book called The 37th Parallel. And it's all in that book. You can find it now on Amazon used copies for $2-3. But it kind of talks all about that. And at the very end of the book, I had speculated that, Bigelow was a big part of this. And at the very end of the book, there's a lot of stuff that's retracted, you know, black lines going through here and there. You know, in other words, I was insinuating that, Bigelow was part. Now, this, you got to understand, this was still before it came out in 2017 that he was part of it. You know, he's a billionaire. I'm a hundredaire. I have a couple hundred dollars. And, you know, there's no way I can compete with, you know, all the money he's got and his attorneys. So, you know, it was kind of like on a DL, kind of poking fun, but not actually saying that I think he was involved in it. So that kind of started back in 2002. Now, since then, you know, I've done a couple of other archaeology digs there, but the issue is, you know, when we're doing digs, we have these big screens that are like 4x4 screens on 2x4s. So as you dig, you kind of sift through the dirt, and we're looking for pieces of metal. Well, the stuff that we're finding now is really, really tiny and would have slipped through the pieces of metal. We would have missed it. Mm-hmm. And because you're doing this out in the middle of the desert, and it's windy and it's sunny, it's 100, 105 sometimes if it's during the summertime. So recently, beginning of June, went out to the site, and the whole purpose for that was for me to get some drone footage and do a little bit of digging, or not digging, just, I meant digging as in digging around, but not actual archaeology digging, just using a metal detector to see if we'd find anything. And that material I was going to use for the Roswell Festival that I was going to lecture at in July. And so I had my metal detector, and then Frank had his metal detector, and we're just kind of like sweeping around out there. And Frank started getting hits. My metal detector, I wasn't. And so I kind of dropped that started watching Frank. Now, I have to tell you this. This is really exciting stuff. Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead. Well, I was out there with a person. I took another person out there that was shooting a little documentary for, you know, his website. Mm-hmm. And I had asked Frank if he wanted to go out to the website, or I'm sorry, to the debris site, you know, with me. And of course he said, you know, I was going to ask you if I could go. So he was pretty excited. And I've been dealing with Frank for a few years, you know, looking at some of the stuff that he had found and trying to figure out where it came from, especially the buttons and all kinds of cool stuff. So we're out there, and see if I can remember exactly what was going on. Okay. So we're out there with I'll just mention his name because he's a cool guy, L.A. Marzullo. So I was out there with L.A. Marzullo, and he had his cameraman, he had his audio guy, and he was interviewing Frank there, and I'm kind of like, you know, watching the whole interview. And then the cameraman says, hey, something happened. I didn't catch the last 30 seconds of this, you know, of this interview. I don't know what's going on with the camera. Let me go figure it out. And at that time, the audio guy goes, yeah, you know what? My battery died. And it was charged earlier. And so it says, I'm going to go back to my truck because I took them all out there in my truck. And I looked over at Frank, and Frank looks at me going, okay, something's going on out here. Because as you're investigators, there's been a lot of times when we've been in active places where there's a high electromagnetic field and your batteries go out. And, you know, there's all kinds of interesting things mucks with your, you know, your technology. So he looked at me and says, hey, Chuck, did you bring your EMF meter? And I said, yeah, it's in my kit. So we brought it out, and Frank was walking with the EMF meter. And I'm going, okay, well, I'm not picking up any. Oh, actually, at that time, we weren't metal detecting. And so I said, I'm going to get my drone set up so I can film him, you know, doing EMF sweeps. And I'm going to use that, you know, in my conference, my lecture in July. And he comes back, he goes, I'm going to get my metal detector. I go, what's up? He goes, well, as I'm walking, it's like waves. So as I walk, there was a wave of EMF, and it would spike a little bit, and you walk and spike again. So he goes, I'm going to grab my metal detector and check this area. I said, great. So I grab my drone, and I put my drone up, and my drone's in a kit. So I'm putting the props on and getting it ready. And I'm right there where Frank is metal detecting, because I don't want to miss anything. If I hear a tone on his metal detector, you know, I want to be there to see it. Yeah. But when I got my drone set up and it powered up, it wouldn't lift off. It said battery air. I'm going, there's nothing wrong. I just charged this battery air. And then, so I pushed the battery back in, took it out back in, you know, reset my app. And then it said takeoff air. I'm going, okay, what's going on? And I was getting frustrated because I thought it was something I was doing wrong. So I just took the drone back to where my truck was. And I said, well, I'm going to try it one more time. And then everything worked fine. And it dawned on me, oh my gosh, that was a high EMF area that, you know, that we had issues with a camera and the audio guy. And now the drone wouldn't lift off. So I got the drone up and I was shooting some shots. And then at that time, Frank was using his metal detector, was getting hits. After I finished my drone shooting, I grabbed my metal detector and I went out there too. And I wasn't getting anything, but he was picking up hits. So he found a couple of pieces of material, and that kind of started this whole thing of analyzing. He found one piece, and then he says, the next piece I'm going to give to you. And, you know, I'll test it here in New Mexico. You can test yours in Colorado, and we'll do two tests, two separate labs, two separate states, and see if we get the same results. And that's what you kind of want to do, because right. If you use one lab and their instruments are not calibrated properly, or they have older software or whatever, you know, you never know if you're going to get, you know, if the results you're getting are going to be the results that anybody was getting, right? So this was the best way of doing it. And that's where we came up with aluminum alloy. Now, we went back again towards the end of June, right before the, you know, the Roswell Festival. And this time, I was a little smarter. So the metal detector that I had originally was designed to look for coins and stuff like that. Frank's metal detector is a fissure, and it was designed to look for gold. And so the frequencies are different when you're looking for specific metals. He was getting hits. I wasn't getting anything. So within the time frame of the beginning of June to the end of June, I got on eBay and I found a new Fisher Gold Bug Pro metal detector that's designed just to look for gold nuggets. We went back out there end of June, and within 20 minutes, I got a hit with this new metal detector. And it, so now it dawns on me now that you need a gold hunting metal detector to look for this anomalous, you know, material. Now, you have to understand that in the past 20 years, we've been out there with metal detectors and got nothing. And then at one point, even I think MUFON had shot a show or something out there, and they had a slew of people out there with metal detectors. But as it turns out, I think that they were using the wrong detectors, because depending on the detector, that, you know, depends on what you're looking for, the frequencies are a little bit different, adjusting the ground, the whole bit's a little different. But it seems like the Fisher, you know, a gold hunting metal detector seems to also be a Roswell, hunting metal detector, and it worked really, really well. So when we were out there at the end of June, we found a good, see, 4, 8, 9, about 10 pieces. Now, what's interesting about these pieces is it's some we found on the ground, on closer to the surface, and some was, you know, 6 or so inches in the ground. Some of it was shiny. Some of it had some patina on it. And depending on which ones we had analyzed, the ones that had some patina, some dark coloring in it, were thrown into like a 6,000 series. Frank can explain this more because he's a geologist and he's, you know, who I look to, you know, to really explain, you know, the science behind it. You know, my background is microchip design. So I know that aluminum alloys is used in microchip. And it's you know, it's very conducive of electricity, so we use it all the time in designing microchips. It's one of the higher metals that has that we use as power buses in microchip design, and just a little higher in resistance, but it's a great conductive of electricity. So current flow is really easy through that. So this is stuff that technology now uses in microchip design, because, you know, it's like I said, you can pump current through it. So it's interesting, though. So we have two different types of metals in this area. It's kind of confusing why we have it. But the 6000 series, when we tested it, not only on the X-ray spectrometer or the SEM, the scanning electron microscope, we're getting these results that it's falling into like an unknown polymer. I'm sorry. It's falling into an unknown aluminum alloy. Now, what I mean by unknown aluminum alloy, the polymer was the first one in 2002. These were falling into an unknown aluminum alloy. Now, it's not unknown to the point where it couldn't be created here. It's unknown to the fact that it hasn't been cataloged as a commercial alloy. You know, so you go through the, you know, thousands of alloys that have been cataloged that people are, you know, that the industry is using, and this one falls into a 6000 series, but it hasn't been cataloged. And that's another red flag. Well, why? I get all excited about this because I'm kind of going through it all in my head. I mean, just last week, you know, I had the SEM done over here in Denver, and a couple of days before that, Frank had his done over Albuquerque, and all of a sudden we're getting the same results. And oh my God, this is ridiculous. You know, we're getting this aluminum alloy that is not, you know, registered or cataloged in any of the alloys that, you know, we have right now. So what does that mean? Okay. Yeah. could it be an alloy that, you know, was with some top secret project at one point that never, you know, or still isn't going to be cataloged, you know, for commercial use? Or is it something else? You know, it's really hard to say what's going on. And then what about the other alloys we're getting out there? The stuff that's very similar to aluminum cans, we're getting that too. But when I took the first piece to the lab, you know, out here in Denver that we had found, you know, at the beginning of June, I took it to Colorado Metallurgical Company, and their expertise is aluminum alloys. And this guy, the general manager there, Sean, is looking at this under a microscope, and he said, I can tell you something right now, that if I'm looking at a piece of an alloy for a customer of mine who's using it for whatever project, I would tell him this was a fail. I said, well, what do you mean by a fail? He says, whatever this was used in experienced extreme trauma. He said, explosive in nature. That's what he said. And he says, when you get right down to, you know, 500 microns or so, you're this thing, it experienced something explosive that just destroyed it into such tiny little pieces. And I haven't seen that before. But he said, whatever it is, he was pretty excited. Whatever this metal was used for exploded.
Like a crash, right? Like an impact.
There you go. You know, and so that's another one of these aha moments where, okay, now we're finding evidence. Now, Frank and I can't say that this is extraterrestrial. We can't say that because, you know, if these are baby steps, this is, you know, this is the beginning of going through all the steps of trying to identify this material. So far, we have a couple different materials, and this is really good though, because we have material that we kind of can identify, and then we have some material that we can't really can identify. So now we can use those two materials as comparison, you know, in all our, you know, lab analysis to, okay, to try to figure out what the anomalous metal is. Because when you talk to people, they go, well, there could be an aluminum can. Well, guess what? We've kind of found that or something similar to that. But then now we found something completely different. So we can compare the two. So you can't say this is an aluminum can because we can say this resembles it, but this doesn't. So we can compare the two. So that kind of throws the skeptics out the door at that point when they're saying it's something that's common. Because we found some common stuff. And we found even more common stuff out there, actually pieces of can and some other things. Let me see if I can find this real quick.
Yeah.
And even when you find, you know, little pieces like this, which are just pieces of rusted can, you know, can tops and stuff. So we can find stuff out there that we can absolutely identify, but it's the pieces that we can identify that's making this really, really excited. And so what's next? Well, you know, obviously more testing, you know, we want to, you know, eventually you jump into isotope analysis to see if it's from this planet. The issue with that though, is it's based on technology of how the piece was put together. Now, pretty much if you look at the periodic table, everything on the periodic table is what we've picked up in space so far. There's some little microscopic type balls that they found recently in the ocean that the scientists who found it are saying that could point to extraterrestrial. We may know more about that in a couple of weeks. So we're still learning there could be materials and, you know, coming from meteorites or something, you know, from outer space that may not fall into our periodic table. But so far, everything on our periodic table, you know, is from space. So the metals themselves could be common to other planets, but it's how it's put together technology-wise and some other things that would make it unique of whether or not we would have the technology to do that here. But, you know, if isotope analysis comes back and says, this is unidentifiable, then we've nailed it. Then we have something completely unusual, anomalous, and really exciting. And so, like I said, it seems like every step we take, we're getting closer and closer to, you know, hopefully, you know, of finding some something that's completely unknown, you know, material wise, but you know how it was technology, how it was put together, and but still at that point, we can't say it's extraterrestrial because it could still be something that could be, you know, some top secret, you know, project, something, you know, because I work in a microchip industry, so I've been involved in a few military programs where I've signed non-disclosures, and, you know, now it's just a technology, you know, that I worked on and not the actual material. So I really don't know that, you know, too much about the materials used in it, but, you know, but if you're looking for, you know, you're looking for something, you're looking for an answer of what this stuff is, and you're pointing to like current technology or you can't do that because we found it under 6 inches of dirt, which means it was a few decades ago.
I was just going to ask that, Chuck. Yeah. You know, what is a 6000 series alloy, like you mentioned, that could be part of some, let's say, aerospace manufacturer? What is it doing under the ground if that was the surface level like 3-4 decades ago? That makes no sense.
No, yeah. And you're absolutely right. And so it's really easy for people to say, well, you know, we could do that now. You know, and I'm going, fine, but explain why it was under 6 inches of dirt out in the middle of the New Mexico desert and we found it there. Okay, now the aluminum can stuff that's very similar to 3000 series, that wasn't registered till the 60s. Hmm. Okay, so it's not something very recent either. And we found that. Now, for all your viewers out there, if you know who Lieutenant Colonel Philip Corso is, mm-hmm. you know, the day after Roswell book, he wrote that book before he passed away. He said, I can't remember. I hope I get this right. I think he was working for General Trudeau on reverse engineering Roswell debris. Now, you have to understand, this is all stuff, you know, we as investigators, we read. I've actually read some of the transcripts from Philip Corso when he was interviewed by Paola Harris. Mm-hmm. And he seems very, very, very credible. As a military individual, he was very, very credible, and the Army never really discredited him after the book came out. But here he says, we got this material from Roswell, and I got it, and I'm working for the Foreign Technology Department in reverse engineering, and we're going to take this material, and we're going to push it into industries here in the U.S. that have government contracts, and let's see if we can reverse engineer this and use it as our, you know, in our technology. And that's what they do, and companies do it too. Other companies, they'll take a competitor company piece of technology and they'll reverse engineer it, trying to figure out why these guys are their products working in this product and there isn't.
Right.
Nothing new, and we've been doing it for years and years. So if he's right and some of this metal was found in 47 and was folded into our industry, then it kind of makes sense that if we're finding some 3000 series that could be closer to aluminum can, but it wasn't registered till the 60s, mid 60s, I think it was. I think Frank was saying, and you can ask Frank about that, then that would make sense. But still, why are we finding it there? And why is it kind of still resembling, you know, the pieces of material that experience trauma, a very explosive in nature, but it's confusing. And then there's also the thought that maybe it was seeded to throw investigators off. I mean, so you kind of have to think about all different types of possibilities while we're finding this. You know, one thought is, whatever exploded, whatever crashed there had two different types or even multiple types of alloys, which makes sense, you know, associated with it. And we're finding pieces and pieces now. Why are we finding now? Because the metal detectors, the technology now is way better than it was back in 2000, way better than it was in 1947. And the metal detectors back then were used to look for mines, big pieces of metal, not little tiny fragments, right? And the Fisher Goldbug Pro that I bought has only been out for a couple of years, and one of the specifications was that they altered the frequency a little bit to find gold. So the metal detectors are getting better and better and better. Technology is getting better and better. And now we're hitting, you know, the jackpot when we go back to the debris site. So when people say, well, why'd you find it then? Technology's better now.
Yeah.
And it'll be better in 5 years. And, you know, who knows what we're going to find in 5 years. But right now, with current technology, we're finding stuff. Now, it's not easy. Okay. So Frank and I out there, you know, Frank, the last time Frank and I were out there, we were both using Fisher metal detectors. And we were out there a good 4 or 5 hours. So it takes a bit, you know, to look for this. And it's painstaking and, you know, swinging it back and forth real slow. And you get hits. And you got to dig into the hard ground and sift through it with your fingers because the pieces are so small. It's easy, very easy to miss this stuff. So you really got to be patient, which is tough for me because I'm not that patient. Frank was teaching me, you know, patience. I go, yeah, how long does that take? You know, yeah. To learn patience.
Exactly. I will wait as long as I have to find an interstellar piece of a spacecraft, Chuck. I'll tell you that much. Two last questions for you, actually. I want to go back to that idea of seeding for just a moment. So that would technically mean someone actually planted like pieces there. For what purpose or motivation do you feel?
Have you ever seen something that you just can't explain? Something paranormal, perhaps? The mystery of that event marinates in our minds and fuels our interest into the unexplained. If you're intrigued by these mysteries of the world, from ghosts and haunted locations, UFOs and aliens, cryptids and legends, perhaps the answers you seek lie within our domain. Parabox explores these topics with unique paranormal mystery t-shirts. Each month, you will receive a new paranormal soft style t-shirt and content card about that month's theme. The shirt and card will contain clues to find a hidden password. Enter the correct password to reveal our monthly challenge. Solve the puzzle and be entered into our drawing for free merchandise. Soft style t-shirts, paranormal themes, puzzling challenges. ParaboxMonthly.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's say it was I'll just throw it out there. Let's say it was a flying saucer, UFO. I mean, yeah. It was extraterrestrial technology. And, of course, you know, as investigators, I've been doing this long enough that, you know, a lot of my stuff is being monitored. A lot of stuff that goes public is being monitored. And they're watching mm-hmm. this. And they're going, okay, if these guys actually find pieces out there that point back to the 1947 crash, maybe we should kind of throw them off. Mm-hmm. And how they can throw us off is if, you know, they, whoever they is, you know, create these, you know, little pieces of known alloys or something and throw that out there under the thought that we find those and say, hey, it's extraterrestrial. And they go, no, it's not, because it's this, you know. But they don't know me and Frank, because me and Frank, or Frank and I, we don't do that. All we say is, look, you know, we're going to analyze this stuff. We're not very quick to judge. We don't, you know, we just don't assume. It's all, you know, because we're both analytical thinking. Mm-hmm. So everything step by step by step to step to see what this stuff is. Hey, look, some of it is an anomalous alloy in the 6000 series. Some of it is very similar to the 3000 series. Now we can compare the two. And that kind of messes up, if it was seated, that we're not that ignorant, that, you know, or stupid, that we would just look up in the sky and say, that's a UFO, when it's really, you know, Mars or Jupiter yeah. or something, you know, or the ISS going by. I mean, you have to really know what you're looking at and know what you're doing, if, you know, to make these extraordinary claims. If you're going to make an extraordinary claim, you damn well better have extraordinary evidence to back it up. Or you're going to get, you know, chewed up by, you know, the skeptics, bunkers, and the media too. So mm-hmm. Frank and I are being very, very careful with this. And as we're releasing it, and we're showing the data, so people can look at the data and say, I can, you know, and fine. At this point, I haven't had anybody since the first time I started releasing this, you know, come out and say, oh, I can identify exactly. Here's the, you know, here's the sheet, the alloy sheet that says that's what it's that, you know, and okay. But, you know, if we were trying to hide something, we wouldn't put the data out there for damn sake, you know. So, you know, we put it out there and say, look, guys, this is what we're finding. Here's the data. You know, you tell me.
Yeah.
Are we on?
So, sorry, Chuck. I'm just like, the gravity of these results really hit me when you put out this post recently of this 6000 alloy. I mean, this comes back highly anomalous. Like you guys mentioned, there was a high level of barium found as well. I don't think people realize like how important this discovery could actually be and what could happen after this,
you know,
in terms
really,
of more testing. It's crazy.
It's really funny too, because the first piece I had tested, and I didn't post it because I didn't save it, it had barium in it. And, mm-hmm. and we were thinking, what the hell's barium? There must be an issue. And we were poking around, but you see, you know, when you do an X-ray spectrometer or SCM, you're looking at a very, very small piece of a large, you know, very tiny. And if you look at the picture on my website where it shows an extreme close up and it looks like you're looking inside a cavern, you'll see a little scale right there. It says, I think it's say 5 microns or something. It's really crazy. Let me just scroll down there and see that one piece. But let's see. I think, so it says 5 microns. If you go to my website, ufonut.com, you'll see that image there. And so it almost looks like you're looking. Yeah, that's it right there.
Okay.
On the lower right-hand corner, you'll see 5 microns. So 5 microns, I explained it, you know, what a micron is. And it's 1 × 10⁻⁶. And this is microchip size, you know, structures is what we're looking at right here. And so when you get down and you're poking around, you may pick up a little bit of barium, you may not be. See, we were using an X-ray spectrometer, so we weren't getting down to this level when I first had to test it, you know, the piece in the beginning of June. Now, if you look at the color pictures to the right there, that whole speckled pattern, each color now, this is using an SEM, scanning electron microscope, and this particular one, what it does is it shows you on the elements, you know, how it's how that element is scattered within the metal. Mm-hmm. And if you see blotches, like with silicone, or I'm sorry, silicon, there's two different types.
Yeah.
One's in microchips and one's in people's bodies. silicon. You might see splotches, and that could just mean it just could be a contaminated metal with silicon from being out in the middle of the desert over decades. But if you see speckled pattern like you're seeing here, that means it's part of the metal itself, is part of the alloy itself. And when you're looking at that, and so we did get barium hits from the first metal. I thought, okay, maybe the X-ray spectrometer was picking up something unusual, maybe not. And I was focusing more on the aluminum alloys. But Frank, being the smarter of the two when it comes to geology, focused on that and saw that that was the case. Next time we'll look for barium more, but
yeah. Well,
we're learning with this stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. You're learning as you go. And I think that's what's most important. And, you know, I can be fully transparent. I am working with an individual and with Frank on hopefully assisting you guys in getting those isotopic tests done. That's in motion right now. I can say that there's communication happening where hopefully we can get more tests, whatever we can do in the, you know, public research community to help you guys. I mean, you did the hard part. You guys discovered these, you did the initial testing. Let the rest of us take some of that weight off your shoulders now. But you get all the credit. You get all the credit, Chuck. This does come back extraterrestrial.
Well, the thing is, you know, I mean, we're the initiators.
Yes.
But exactly. By opening it to the public and releasing all our information. Now, if anybody's ever been to my website in the past, anytime I do an investigation, I throw it all out there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't hide anything. Well, I mean, there's certain things I can't say because it may be military oriented and I don't want to, you know, muck with crossing that, you know, proverbial line or anything. But when it comes to ufology, I throw everything out there, and I throw it out there for people to look at themselves and make their own decisions. Now, just, you know, I see things my way. I have tons and tons of books behind me and more books and boxes, and I'll use some of those books as reference, but I don't treat it as a Bible, because a lot of those investigators that are writing these books, well, every one of those investigators have never found proof of an extraterrestrial, you know, technology. It's all speculation. So you have to be very, very careful. If you're an investigator, you don't want to follow someone else's investigator or investigations because they haven't found anything yet. They may have some good information, but you got to take your own road and you got to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And you may pick up information here and there. You may want to try a couple of different things. I've done with cattle mutilations, and I found that stuff that I was doing on my own, actually, I was getting better results. And so even people out there now that are following this, you can pick up some of the information from me. We throw it out there. And if you take your own little route, that's good too, because you may come up with something that we missed. You know, we only know what we know. And if you ever listen to anybody on anybody's podcast that says, well, that guy's wrong, I know that. No, you don't.
No.
You just think you know. I just think I know. Nobody knows everything. There's an idiot. Anyway, scientist out there recently that's I don't want to mention his name, but I know everything and there's no extraterrestrials. And this is, you know, he's just a physicist and everybody knows who this guy is, but he only knows what he knows. And he's got these glasses on. And,
I think we all know who you're talking about.
Yeah. And you can't do that. You have to completely be open. You have to be open to everything. You don't want to follow that one guy's thought pattern because he's going to lead you into a rabbit hole and you're not going to go anywhere. You follow the people that say, hey, look at our evidence, go your own way and try and find things. Now, exactly what you're saying here about, you know, you helping us out with isotope analysis. That's what we want. We don't want to, because you know, like you said, you know, if more people involved in this, they get involved, the faster we'll get information done, the more avenues we can hit at once. These investigators, some of these investigators, you know, that've been going on for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, you know, they've gone one way and they haven't really, I mean, look at the Linda Moulton Howe, right? She's really good at what she does. She's an investigative journalist, but has she proved extraterrestrials have existed? No, it's because she stays on her own road. And you've got to be able to splinter off. You have to think way, way outside the box. Sometimes you'll hit a block wall, you know, other times you can keep going, and you know, that's what we do. But that's what makes it exciting. The more Absolutely. We do it, the more exciting it is. And now with social media out there and talking to people like you and getting out to the public, really exciting. I'm really happy about it.
It's awesome, man. Well, hey, I want to end on kind of a joke question, okay. But maybe not, because recently we had this UFO congressional hearing with the House Oversight Committee. Very bold claims were made that the United States is in possession of crashed UFOs. There's programs being conducted to reverse engineer the technology. Again, very big, bold claims that have yet to be proven, but the investigations are going on right now. And this kind of led to something very interesting in the National Defense Authorization Act of 2024. Bipartisan senators in the United States are calling for legislation where if there are intact spacecraft or even pieces, and that's the important part here, pieces of non-human craft in either the government's possession or in private possession, the United States government will inevitably have eminent domain over that material, over those craft. If that law passes, that's going to be really interesting to see where all of this leads. We will see if any of what this UFO whistleblower says is true. But my big question for you is, this is kind of the jokey part, but I am serious too. Are you and Frank ever worried or concerned that the work you're doing and the pieces that you're discovering will eventually be swallowed up by the United States again if a law like this passes? I mean, you look at like the materials that To the Stars Academy had, mm-hmm. Or Linda Moulton Howe, and eventually those pieces went off to the United States Army to be tested and they were never heard from again. So somehow these materials always find their way back into the military industrial complex, it seems. So yeah, that's kind of my soapbox moment there. But do you think that these pieces could ever be taken from you guys before the ultimate tests?
Okay, I can tell you this, because I've talked to Frank about, you know, it's interesting because I got people ask me all the time, you know, well, you know, what are you going to do if you find out that it's extraterrestrial? What are you going to do? I go, I've been doing this for 35 years. That thought has only crossed my mind about a million times. And I've gone through every scenario. You know, I have to tell you this. This is absolutely true. Polygraph, if you want to pay for polygraph. You know, in the past couple of decades, I've been contacted twice by someone, it appears to be within the government, asking me specific questions. They would call me, when cell phones first came out and our phone numbers weren't as, as easy to get as it is now. I got a call from an individual and he was asking me about the piece of metal that I found, you know, back in 2002, very specific questions. Mr. Zukowski, can you tell me about this, what you found? What are your results? Da, 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 da. And I said that, and I was very open with them, very truthful. And I said, if you need any more help, give me a call. You know, I'm not here to keep anything from our government. And I'm not here to keep anything from the public. Everybody, it's all open. And he said, thank you very much. And that was the end of that. Very polite. A couple of years later, I got another phone call. And it was, I can't tell you if it's the same individual because it was years later, but it was another male voice saying, Mr. Zukowski, can you tell me about the animal mutilations and some of the investigations? What have you found on that? And I was very, you know, very specific questions. I answered the questions to the best of my knowledge at that time from what I knew. And he said, thank you very much. And so they do I believe, you know, they do come in from time to time and poke around and see what you're doing and look at the websites and stuff. Now, if someone popped up at my door and says, okay, we got to confiscate your material. And I said, fine, you want to sign for it? I'll give it to you. That's perfectly fine. Because now I can say, hey, guess what? The government came over and took this stuff from me. That means it must be important enough that they took it.
Right.
And that's a big red flag out there for everybody, because now they're interested in this stuff and they want our material. And here's the point. Frank and I'll just go back out to the breeze site and find some more.
Exactly. Yeah. Or keep some hidden somewhere, please. No, actually, I shouldn't say that.
And then we'll just go back and we know what to look for. We know where to look. We know what material is 6,000. We know what's 3,000 because we've done this enough now. So we can identify it, visually identify it. You know, take it. Run with it. We'll just go out there and find some more.
Yeah. What is that old saying? They doth protest too much, right? They take it to try to keep the story under wraps and of what it is. And in reality, them taking it is showing us there's something to it. There's something important.
And you bet I would just roll on that and throw that out there like it's nobody's tomorrow. Now, here's something Frank and I talked about. If they came to us and said, we don't want you to talk about this anymore. Okay, now that's a scenario too. Then we would say, the only way we'll do that is if you fill us in.
That's fair. That's a good, deal.
And we would sign non-disclosures. Now people after going, well, why would you do that? Well, because we've been doing this so long that it's our obsession, and it's something that we want to figure out before we leave this planet, however we leave it. I'm not going to turn down. I'm not, if someone comes in and says, hey, you want to work for us? I'm not going to turn that down if it'll lead me to the truth of extraterrestrials living on this planet or visiting this planet or whatever, because, that'll satisfy me. At this point, everything goes out. But you have to think about all the scenarios too, because they could just off you.
That's true.
You got to think about that too. So, and that's happened. Remember Max Spears?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, for people,
the black vial they found. Yeah.
So he told his mom a couple of days before he died. Now, Max Spears was an investigator, and he crossed that proverbial line. And then he texted his mom or something and says, if, something happens to me, go public with this. And he was found dead with some type of a black liquid or something coming out of his mouth. It was in his lungs. So he was poisoned. So this isn't a business you want to go into that you think it's all fun and games. It really isn't. When you get phone calls from individuals that could be working for the Pentagon, you get followed. I've been followed once. My sister's an investigator in Missouri. She's been followed a couple times in investigations. So, we're being watched, basically, and they're watching us and seeing what we do. And if we go in an area that they don't want us to go in, they're going to let us know. Hopefully they're going to let us know ahead of time and not just run us off the road or, something. But I think that's not going to be the case now, because there's a lot of people within the government and a lot of people within the military that want this stuff to go public. And I think it's the perfect time right now. It's the right time, like you say, with legislation, and development to get this out there. So, and then social media, now, we say something and it, just like a speed of light, it's out there and everybody has access to it. And it's because of your viewers, that are helping this become a reality, because they talk, they see it. It's because of you with your podcasts that are getting the information out, that people are watching it, and it's a multiplier effect that trickles out. It's a virus, but it's a good virus.
A good virus.
A good virus. That's a virus you definitely want. Yeah.
Yes, for sure, man. Well, hey, you mentioned people watching you. While we don't want the Men in Black watching you, Chuck, where can everyone else watch you, find you, keep up with your work? Give us all of that information, man.
Please. Well, that's UFO Nut. So it's UFONUT.com. The reason why it's UFO Nut is because years and years ago, you know, I was called a nut. People said, you're just crazy doing this. And some people still do. They're so, you know, tunnel vision. They can't, you know, they can't see anything outside of wherever they're going. And they say, well, you're crazy, you're a nut or whatever. And so I, instead of getting mad, I decided to go with it and just kind of flow with it. And I created an acronym, which is Unconventional Flying Objects, Non-Human, Unrecognizable Technology. So that's UFO Nut. But it's the license plate of my truck, UFO Bikers on my Harley, UFO Lab is on my trailer. Well, let's guess this is right here. UFO Nut on my Harley. Nice. And UFO Biker stuff. So, you know, I'm very open and public about it. And it's really cool because people will see it and they'll stop me and they'll give me, you know, their own, you know, reports of sightings and stuff. So it's pretty cool. UFONUT.com. At the very top, it says email Chuck. That's directly to me. So please, you know, if you have any questions, email me. Depending on how many emails I get, it may take a couple of days for me to, you know, to get back to you. But I do get back to every one of my emails. And look at the website. You know, it's all out there, from cattle mutilations to lights in the sky that I've filmed to the Roswell stuff going way, way, way back. It's all out there for everybody to look at and make your own assessment. Make your own judgments. Just because I'm a UFO investigator, I'm not saying that I know it all. I don't know it all. Like I said, this is a learning experience for me and Frank on how we do this stuff. You got some great ideas, let us know, because we don't know everything. You know. But don't ever, ever trust any investigator out there that says, I know it all, I know everything, and you don't know what you're talking about. And no, that's not true. You know, you got to leave everything open.
Absolutely, man. It's a mystery we all continue to chase for our own reasons, our own purpose, our own meaning. And hey, in terms of your meaning and Frank's, I can't wait to see what comes of this. It's very exciting. And we'll have to have you back on when we get those isopropyl ratios back for sure.
Well, I guess, you know, it's funny because we were talking to, I'm not going to mention the other individuals, but you know, they wanted us to go public with them, and they were going to do a big press release and a press conference and on and on. And turns out that they were kind of exploiting what we were doing, you know, for their own benefit. That's okay. I understand. Everybody's got an angle, and that's not a problem. But then they come back at the last minute. And this was just Friday, when, you know, because I was going to hold off until this week coming up to do a press release and a whole bit. And they said, well, we want you to have more data. And when you have enough data and isotope analysis that it proves that it's extraterrestrial, come back and we'll do the press release and we can guarantee all this and not, you know, and all the TV spots you want. And I go, I don't need you. If I can come out and say this is extraterrestrial, everybody's going to be coming to me and Frank. Isotope analysis is different though. You know, when we get our, you know, as we go through the process and we do more lab results, absolutely, we want to come back on this podcast and tell you exactly what we're finding, you know. But you'll know if it's extraterrestrial, it'll be everywhere. Isotope analysis won't tell us that. Isotope analysis will be another big step, you know. And then after isotope analysis, if it says it's anomaly and we go out on your podcast and releasing this information, isotope analysis, now we have to go to the science community. And now the science community, or even, you know, Congress, and we would go to Congress and say, look, we got something, we got evidence, proof. What's our next step? So something like that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. The steps are gradual, but they're baby steps, and we're in the infancy. Of disclosure, and we'll get there, man. We'll get there. There's so much more I want to talk to you about, Chuck, but we'll save it for the next show. This is a huge, huge development, and I can't be happier for you guys. And I have to thank you once again for coming on Somewhere in the Skies today.
Well, you know, like I said, it's shows like yourself that gets this information out in public. And if we didn't have people like you that host these shows, and then your viewers, listeners, if it goes audio or video, you know, it wouldn't help us. And the whole purpose of this is to get the information out public. But you guys, you're the driving force. You know, we're the ones that started it. You know, we'll start the car, but you're going to help us drive it. And that's what we're doing. We're not going to be able to get from A to B without, you know, the support of your viewers and listeners and these podcasts. And you're the first one. So you're going to be jumping off the floor and starting that car and getting it running.
I am revving that engine. I am revving that engine, brother. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.